This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You are listening to the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with the Fulhamish podcast, the returning Dom Betts.
Hello,
the
hello.
Returning Guy Barlow. The Kings are back in the studio. The squad is strong tonight. Fulhamish do have numbers. They have the depth, but the returning Kings are back tonight here because the international break is over. Fear no more. Real football returns this weekend. The Championship is back up and running. Fulham play West Brom. We will be doing an opposition preview talking all about that game. But it was the international break. Let's start there. There was a few Fulham players on international duty. Dom, how were the Fulham players doing? Were you keeping a close eye on that as I expected you were?
Well, yeah, obviously, we know Mitrovic and his goal record for Serbia is second to none. Was it 27 and 51 now?
Bleeds goals.
He bleeds goals. Yeah, I think someone on Twitter said, like, oh, why is this championship striker starting over Yuka Jovic? I was like, I can tell you why, mate. Look at his goal record.
It speaks for itself. It does. No questions needed.
It really does speak for itself. His goal record is absolutely phenomenal. Then Cyrus Christie played a part for the Republic of Ireland. I don't know if he's playing holding midfield again like he has previously, but you know, I don't think he can play anywhere, to be honest.
He played a full 90 minutes as well, didn't he?
He did play a full 90 minutes, and more than he's probably going to do Fulham for the rest of the season. So,
harsh.
Yeah.
we pick up where we left off with you two last time in the studio. Debate Central. We're talking everything about the Fulham players, but you just mentioned Mitrovic there. He is in a rich vein of scoring form for club and country at the minute, isn't he, Guy?
Yeah, definitely. I think, what was it like? I think five games in a row for us, and then he's topped it up with a brace against them.
Yeah, seven in his last seven games.
Yeah, unbelievable. What a guy.
He hasn't even looked that good this season so far, and he's still got 7-7.
Is that a positive thing? Because if you're scoring and Dom Betts is saying you've not hit top form yet, you're not peaked, well, this can only be a good thing, because when he does, surely the goals will even increase.
Well, yeah. I mean, we all know what you can do at this level. And I guess maybe that's why we're not, like, dwelling on it too much, because we just know that it's Mitrovic in the Championship. Of course he's going to score. You know, like, that's a given. There's a lot of other stuff going on the team that we're going to focus on, or our minds and eyes might be drawn to instead.
Well, Dom, there were other players in international action who represent the wonderful badge of Fulham. Who were they?
Tim Ream, obviously, but back in Captain America.
Captain America. Okay, and how did he get on?
Hey, weird thing about Tim Ream is he isn't exactly always the greatest for the national side. Bit like when he plays for us in the Premier League. I think I said it with Kieran Critchard earlier, that he turns from Maldini to Titus Bramble from when he goes into Championship to when he goes into Premier League. But you know, I think he's finally coming to fruition for the United States. I mean, he has been getting a lot of stick a lot in sort of recent times. So I think he did fairly well. I mean, I don't know if at his age if he can be playing, you know, four games in the space of 2 weeks, but we'll see how that goes. So I think for us, it's nice. It's not always nice to see your players doing well on international duty. I mean, we also had Steven Sessegnon playing for obviously the under-21s for England. And did Eddie Boothroyd realise what Sessegnon he had, because he was playing him, giving him a number 11 shirt and playing him left wing? So I think he might have forgotten which Sessegnon he brought on board.
The man is a genius. Well, Dom, you were at the England game last night. They played Kosovo. It was 5-3. But we're talking about the England 21s then. Steven Sessegnon did help the England under 21s. How impressed were you with Steven for the under 21s and in general this season?
Yeah, I think he's come in and taken his opportunity in full grasp, like we expected him to, like we saw his twin brother do a few years ago. So, yeah, it's great to see him in the under-21s. I don't understand this weird idea where people don't like their youngsters going to under-20s, suffering burnout. It's a great thing for them, because otherwise, they might want to play them in a tournament in the summer, let's say. You can't just throw them straight into that. I think this is very good experience. I think they're at the KCOM Stadium up in Hull, and it looked like a very good crowd, actually, where they played. So, obviously, they've got a 2-0 win over Kosovo. I think Phil Foden got both goals. And so, yeah, I'm happy for Steven Sessegnon. I think, you know, at this stage in his career, I don't think he can be playing too much football, really. I don't think at the stage in the career when you are only, what, 18, 19, I don't think you really can be playing too much football. You know, you always complain about the young players not playing enough, so it's great to see him playing.
Guy, Dom mentioned it there, you know, at this age, you want to plan as many games as possible. You know, practice makes perfect. But it's not just about playing for the England under-21s, more games that will help Fulham. But he mentioned it there, Phil Foden, playing alongside these types of players will only improve him, won't they?
Yeah, exactly that. I think Steven Sessegnon's also done well to break into this under 21 team so soon. I mean, what was it, 4 starts in the championship? And bear in mind, he hadn't played a league game before this season. I was a bit surprised to see him in there, to be honest. Like, I'm not sure. Obviously, England, as a the senior team, have got this amazing depth at right back, and he's now part of that at the under 21 level. So it is great for him to be in that squad, like you said, and playing with England's other best players at his age group.
Well, I was speaking to Dom earlier before the Fulham show, and we were having this little debate of club or country, who would you put first? Because, you know, if you are playing for your country, you should let your country almost retire you. You should never stop playing for your country until they need you no longer. England's results are more important for Fulham, even though Dom is a diehard Fulham fan. We know that. Guy, where do you stand on the club versus country debate? And also, do you think players see it as this way also?
I think it's not much of a debate here. Me and Dom are on the same page, really. I was just saying outside that last night before the Crossfire game, I wasn't nervous, but I had more nerves than I had done for any Fulham game this season so far. You know, I was... You know, they were a bit of an unknown entity. Crossfield, they won at the weekend. They're second in our group. I was thinking, what they're going to bring, you know? But like you said, that doesn't mean I'm any less passionate about Fulham. I just like...
I think the argument is we're not less... It's not like we don't care about Fulham. We're less passionate about Fulham. We just care more about England.
Yeah, I agree.
I think we can't deny that we don't care about Fulham. I think it's just... For me, it's because... I think one of the main problems here is we've mentioned it a few times on the show when we've talked about promotion to the Premier League is that obviously we've seen Fulham get to the Europa League final and we understand that that's possibly the highest we'll ever go. Whereas with England, we haven't seen them win major trophies, let's say, but we know they have it in them to do so. I think also... that you, when you look at positives within club level, let's say when we won the playoff final, that still resulted in a relegation the following season. I can't see a negative of England winning a major trophy.
Well, I've put my own twist this week on the free word review because there is no free word review, but I'm a big fan of the segment. It is the international break. I want 3 words from the pair of you to sum up Fulham's season so far in 3 words, Dom.
It's gone fine.
It's gone fine, Guy. You could pick 3 separate words. It doesn't have to be a sentence like Dom.
Oh, I was going to do a sentence as well.
All right, no, okay, go for it. I'm trying to help.
Probably about par.
Probably about par and it's gone fine. Now, obviously, hindsight's a wonderful thing. If I would have said before the first ball was kicked in anger of the Championship season, I would have said, well, at the first international break, Dom, you would have said it's gone fine, Guy, just about par. Would you have taken it?
Yeah, I think I would have taken the start of the season we've had because we're in the top 6. Again, it's not about... going all guns blazing at the start of the Championship season. It's not about trying to blow the teams away every single... Because you'll suffer burnout. It's what happened to Leeds last season. They got to about March, April time and their legs were completely gone pretty much. So I think it's just about staying within contention for as long as you can. And then when it gets to February, March, the crucial time of the season, you really push on and you go on big runs like we've seen with Villa, we've seen with us before. So I think, yeah, I'm perfectly happy with how the season's gone so far. You've got to remember it's Scott Parker's first season in charge. We've got a fair few players, you know, new players in the starting 11. I'm looking at, you know, Stephen Sessegnon. Mawson and Ream haven't really played together too much. You're looking at Harry Arter midfield. You've got Ivan Caviero. You've got Anthony Knockart, man, like Tony Knockers. Like, you, there are players who are still integrating themselves into the side. So I think 100% would have taken where we are. We're in the playoff positions. We're challenging at the top of the table. We've shown glimpses of what we can do, for example, against Millwall. So, yeah, I'm more than happy with how we're playing so far.
Guy, just about par. You don't want to peak in what is a long Championship season. Is there a case of that? You don't want to peak too early.
Yeah, definitely. As I said, you mentioned the runs that we went on and the Villa went on last season. But, I mean, I say par, and there's a difference between saying that and being like, I would have taken 10 points from 18, you know? Because, like, the performance away at Barnsley in the first game of the season was not up to scratch, you know? And performance at home to Forest, yeah, they scored 2 goals and 2 chances and, like, we dominated the ball, but ultimately we lost that game, you know? And
yeah, I think the way we worded it was we played well, but we just didn't create enough chances.
Yeah, and those 2 losses do worry me a little. If you were to extrapolate out, so 2, you know, if you, what, every 6 games you win 3, draw 1, lose 2, that's probably about playoff form. So we should be challenging, I don't know, it's a difficult one to say now. If I obviously would take playoffs, but I think we have got it in us to go and get automatics.
You mentioned the defeats there to Barnsley, to Forest. The last time we saw Fulham in action was the 1-1 draw with Cardiff. Obviously, Harry Arter sent off. I didn't get your two opinions on that. It was Jack Kelly on the show last week. Are you a little bit worried that Fulham are showing maybe an inconsistency? Because when they have won this season and the football they've played, they've been absolutely brilliant. But then the next week, it can be all so different. Is that maybe what's worrying you, aside from the points total that you mentioned?
I think maybe it's too early to call it inconsistency, more like we haven't kicked into gear yet, you know? Like, that performance away at Barnsley, I bet if we even looked at it tactically compared to away at Cardiff, it'd be completely different and within about six games, you know? So I think we are still working it out. Scott Parker's, more importantly, the most important person. He's still working it out. And so to say we're inconsistent is maybe a bit harsh, because I feel like we're just getting there, you know? Like, our level is slowly increasing, and we might have had a little peak against Millwall, but then right back down to earth against Forest. So, you know, we need to, like, continue growing as a team, and the results will come.
Well, it's not inconsistency. Do you agree with that, Dom?
Yeah, I don't think it's inconsistency. I think we've played six very, very different sides, and we've had to play different ways against them. So I don't think that's... As I said, it's going fine for me, because I'm fine to be happy where we are. You know, we don't want to be the runaway leaders like Leeds or like Swansea, and then more pressure heaps on you. You want to be in and around them, but you don't sort of go slightly under the radar. But being a relegated side, we won't completely go under the radar here. But yeah, I'm more than happy. You know, you don't want to go all guns blazing and start off unless you've got the squad that Newcastle and Wolves did. So yeah, I'm perfectly happy with where we are, and I think that we've got a good foundation here to build on for the rest of the season. You know, it is only August, you know. We've got, 40-odd games left in the league still to play. There's plenty of things to play for. You know, Swansea, who are top of the league now, could end up finishing mid-table. We've seen it before with teams who start the championship season very, very well. So, yeah, I'm perfectly happy with how we've done.
Swansea, if you look at, you know, there's that website that aggregates, how many points this team should be expected to get against this team. Basically, Swansea's opening games have been quite easy, according to that, metric.
Except the Leeds game, obviously.
But they got battered in the Leeds game and smash and grab 1-0 win away from home.
Must be like, Charlton when they played Brentford at the Valley.
Yes, and Charlton are still unbeaten as well, which we haven't even spoke about them. But yeah, obviously they're not
your local team at the moment.
They are my local team, yeah.
Well, they are flying under the radar. It's been a blistering start for the Addicts, life back in the Championship. But we're talking Fulham here. It is the end of the international break. Dom, did the international break, even though it's so early in the season, did it come at the right time for Fulham? You needed it, right? Just for your own personal refresher.
Yeah, with six Fulham games in the space of a month, I was like, right, club football on hold.
That's what's important for Scott Parker's men. Yeah. Dom Betts needs a break.
Yeah, I was like, I need a break for more football, but international football.
Guy, maybe you could talk from an actual Fulham player's perspective. Did the break come at the right time for them? Rather than the fans, was the break right for the players?
I'd say so. I mean, clearly they needed a break as well, because there was that photo of Scott Parker getting back on a Ryanair flight, wasn't there, from Portugal?
From Portugal, yeah. Yeah. So, one of the luxuries of European travel, Scott Parker.
No break like a real break.
He went away. So, yeah, clearly they all needed it. And, you know, probably the cliche we trot out most in the show is it was a long old season in the Championship. And, you know, rest your legs, lads. Maybe K-Mac will get over that hangover finally, and we'll see.
Well, he's still struggling from that summer we got promoted, I'm telling you.
Well, the players and the manager might have had a proper break and recharged their batteries, but business was still being done. Michael Hector has signed for Fulham. He'll be joining in January, and we'll be talking all about it next.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkinson. I'm joined in the studio with the Fulhamish boys, Dom Betts and Guy Barlow. We were just talking about the international break. Did it come at the right time for Fulham? Did it come at the wrong time? Is there a right or a wrong time? Can momentum be kept or can it be lost? Well, they play West Brom to kick the Championship season back this weekend. Now, though, a bit of positive news. There has been a signing. The window may be closed, but Fulham are still keen to be doing business.
Wheeling and dealing.
Michael Hector has signed from Chelsea. Disappointing you couldn't get the deal over the line in August, but he has signed. He will join in January. Dom, how are you feeling about this one?
Yeah, I think it would... It's not... I don't think it's as frustrating if we signed him, let's say, like a day after the transfer window closed. Yeah. I think the frustration would be a lot higher. Because it's about a month later, okay, we'll have him in January, that's fine. I mean, I think the reason the deal didn't go through was because Daniel Levy was taking so long to spend the Ryan Sessegnon money, and I think it was basically taking so long for us to get the money that Tony Khan wasn't going to spend anything until we got the money for Ryan Sessegnon. So I think that's the biggest thing that held it up.
Well, we have been joined. We have got a call into the studio. Really pleased to say that. We're now being joined by Ibs on the line. He wants to talk about Michael Heptar. Ibs, thank you so much for calling into the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport tonight. If anyone else wants to call, you can call 0208 70 20 558. Ibs, Michael Heptar has signed. How pleased are you with that signing?
Yeah, I'm excited, man. I'm excited, to be honest. We were saying that Fulham was first class. You're all right, yeah?
Sorry, Ibs, lost you there.
Yeah, like, can you hear me, yeah?
Yeah, perfect. Sorry, mate.
Yeah, well, yeah. So basically, I'm excited. I'm excited about Hector's signature with Fulham. He'd never really kind of properly like established himself with all clubs like, after Chelsea signed him. Obviously, you know, they put a curse on him. But, you know, maybe now he's a Londoner himself. You know, he's got. He said he did state that he's got lots of family who are Fulham fans. Maybe him and Mawson can kind of, you know, build a good relationship, kind of like how Hughes and Hanger had with Fulham for years. Maybe this is something we've been waiting for a very long time. You never know. Especially with the fact that when Hanger and Hughes arrived at Fulham, both of them never came with kind of like big name statuses. They came with like a hard work ethic, and I think maybe Scott Parker can bring that, the best out of Mawson and him, and maybe join a partnership. And you never know, you know, maybe, you know, to rip up the championship and, you know, and potentially maybe, you never know, create a good solid defence in the Premier League.
Obviously, he won Wednesday's Player of the Season last year. Do you expect him to come in for Tim Ream when he does sign in January? Or when he does, obviously, eligible to play in January?
Yeah, I think so. Honestly, I think he's the long-term replacement for Tim Ream. But I don't know how Scott Parker's going to drop Ream without it, you know, being a bit awkward. But, you know, it's football. And I don't think we'll bid at $8 million for someone to sit in the bench, to be honest with you, especially after with his rapport. You know, he's had a start. You know, he's done well at Wednesday. Before that, he was at, where was that? He was in German League, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was Eintracht Frankfurt.
And he was at Hull as well. So I think he's looking to settle down and establish himself as a solid defender. And I think, you know, maybe we can bring the best out of him. I want to speak something else, Dom. I want to speak to you a lot about Anguissa and Seri.
Yep.
Have you looked up? Yeah. So basically, I know last week when Real Madrid played Villarreal, everyone was getting gassed online about Anguissa's performance.
Oh, because he bodied Danny Carvajal, didn't he?
Yeah, and he's done really well. Even now, even some of the Villarreal fans were getting really excited about his second half performance in particular. But look, two things. One, do Fulham fans know the actual situation of Anguissa, and or did we have to sell him on because of his wages and FFP rules? That's the first question. Two, would you lot mind him coming back if everything goes according to plan, if we get promoted, obviously. And how can that potentially ruin the dynamics in the change room, you know, and what's the situation of Seri? Or you look at, you know, so Anguissa is the situation is slightly different to Seri's, I know, but Anguissa mainly, and then we can come on to Seri afterwards, but Anguissa mainly, what's your thoughts on that? Because a lot of Fulham fans were saying, one argument was saying, no, he didn't want to be up for the Championship Challenge, you know, forget him. And some others were saying, no, I think Tony Khan was forced to sell him because of FFP rules. I think he's got that understanding. And do Villarreal have the option to sign him permanently if we were to get promoted? Or is that a thing where that clause is only triggered once if we stay in a championship? So, you know, there's a little bit of a misunderstanding from, you know, I don't know if you lot know something, we don't know, I don't know. So what are your thoughts?
I think with Anguissa, we start with him. I think with both deals, actually, with him and Surrey, there is a view to buy, but I don't believe there's any actual obligation in there, so they don't have to do it if they don't want to. But for me, I wouldn't take either of them back at the end of their loan spells, just because they can be great players, and we did have some technically great players last season. You can include, you know, the likes of Ryan Babel, Andre Schürrle in that debate, but I do think with the likes of Schürrle, Seri and Anguissa coming, I do think it's splitted the dressing room, and I think that we need to be more sensible with our signings next summer. And I don't think these two, I think it's like the Fulham, you know, dressing room could feel like, oh, they went away, played in La Liga and the Superliga in Turkey, and then came in, obviously, once we got promoted and came back into the side. So I don't know if it's the best thing for the dressing room dynamics. I definitely think that's the case with Seri anyway. Anguissa might be a bit different because he's a bit of a younger player looking to prove himself. But yeah, the Seri deal is obviously come into repute again this week with the with obviously the reports that we're going to get onto later in the show, obviously, about him accusing Nice of fraud. I mean, most Fulham fans could probably say that we could accuse him of fraud by the way he played a lot of last season. So, I think personally, I wouldn't take either of them back. I don't know about you, but I just think it would just mess too much with the dressing room dynamic. I'm more than happy to see them go on and do great things in Europe, but yeah, for me, I just don't think it's the right thing to bring them back if we were to get promoted.
Yeah. No, I think you've got a valid point, Dom. You know why? Because I think with Fulham mainly, I think what's best for Fulham, I think traditionally we've always had 2-3 stars and a group of 8-9 hard workers. So I mean, and generally, I mean, we haven't, you know, even under the Roy Hodgson era, or even had a few good seasons under Hughes, you know, and a decent cup runs here and there. But like, we weren't really the ones, you know, who were after superstars. And you know, I think Yol started that trend of just buying whoever, whenever. And obviously, I'm talking about Berbatov coming here, and then, you know, Berbatov was you know, he definitely thought he was bigger than Fulham. So, and you know, you're right. The big names and big statuses and players leaving, and you know, it's not good for dynamics, and especially maybe traditionally with Fulham as well. I think if you look at the situation of Palace now and Wilfred Zaha, it's almost getting borderline embarrassing for the club. I think they're going to have to get rid of him. With smaller clubs, you're better off saving your pride, getting rid of deadwood or players who don't want to be there, who think they're too big for the club, and just building on and on with players who want to be here and fight for the challenge and, you know, onwards and upwards. So yeah, man. And sorry, Dom, quickly, where do you squeeze Josh Onnemar into our starting lineup? Do you see him as part of a plan, are you not sure yet?
I'm not really sure. I mean, we haven't really seen much of him. Obviously, he played a bit of part in the under-23s and sort of came into the cup game. Yeah, I'm not really too sure. At the moment, I'm fairly happy with Johansson, obviously Kearney and Harry Arter. But I don't know. I don't really know where I stand. Obviously, Harry Arter will have a game suspension, obviously, when he comes back. But yeah, I just haven't seen enough of him. I don't really know. Like, I don't know if many Fulham fans know. I don't really know what his best position within the midfield is. I don't know if it is playing, you know, the Johansson role, it is covering Tom Kearney at the number 10 slot. But you know, we could see him come in, let's say, obviously on Saturday against West Brom. So for me, I'm happy for the Josh Onnemar we signed him. I think he's a very good, promising player. But it's just I don't think anyone has really seen enough of him to sort of work out where he would fit in within the squad. So at the moment, I'm really not too sure.
Yeah, he's 23. He's still young, so he's got lots of time to develop and stuff like that. But some of the Tottenham fans, they were saying Pochettino wanted to bring him back from being a striker, and put him in that kind of Dembele role that Martin Yol put. Right, who was it? Yeah, Martin Yol put Moussa Dembele, converted him from an attacking striker to a central midfielder. In essence, where he just converts defence to attack and just breaks up play, sort of something that we saw potentially, that we thought we saw and Gisa would do this season. But you never know. I mean, obviously, we'll live and learn. I mean, we'll see. I mean, I'm sure we've got a long, long, long championship campaign. So you never know. I think he's got a decent part to play, but I think he's got to prove himself, obviously, first. Scott Parker's not going to slot him in straight away. I mean, yeah, man.
Thank you for calling into the studio. We really appreciate it. Always good to hear from Fulham fans. Hopefully we'll hear from you at a later date in the season when the games are back up and running. Ibs there, Fulham fan. Always a pleasure to have callers into the studio.
Take care, man.
If you want to call in, you can call us on 0208 70 2558. Let's quickly round up the Michael Hector signing because, you know, it shows that Fulham are working behind the scenes, Guy. You know, the transfer window is closed. You know, I spoke, there was 1 or 2 days left in the window and Dom said, no, Fulham won't sign anyone else. Bobby Reid signed. He said, I'm not quite sure that Fulham needed him. Even not that Dom wasn't saying they didn't want him, but he was quite surprised at the signing. Now there's another signing. Is there still loads of work being done then, obviously, behind the scenes?
Yeah, clearly. You know, Tony Khan is one of those guys who's like, I remember in the interview he did with Fulham, she said he was a workaholic, you know? Mm. And obviously he's got a lot of stuff to work on with his wrestling thing and his NFL team. So he kept busy, but he does also say that he's based at Fulham. So, you know, I think that, as Dom said before, we were waiting for that money for Sessegnon to come in. And once it's come in, we've clearly got Michael Hector on a permanent, which is an interesting kind of a, well, you know, not like us, really, especially in the Championship.
We didn't spend any money in the transfer window.
Yeah. which is...
Well, technically, obviously, on loan deals. Obviously, there's probably some money
yeah.
with fees and that. But yeah, with mainly loan deals. So it's interesting that we've supposedly spent a fairly hefty fee on Michael Hector. But yeah, as we spoke with Ibs, it's going to be interesting to see where he slots in.
Also, it's going to be interesting to see, because it is a permanent deal, but that completes in January. Does he now train with
Fulham?
Well,
he's apparently training with Fulham for the next 6 months. So I presume he's going to be getting games under the under-23s, I'd imagine. So playing, you know, the Checkers
Trophy. In the door.
In those games, in the Checkers Trophy games we have. I think we have a couple more of them left in the group stages. So
he's allowed to play in them, is he then?
I presume he's only playing.
Because if the deal doesn't go through,
yeah,
to January,
I guess it'll only be non-competitive games for the under 20.
Behind closed doors.
Yeah, I presume that's what he's going to play. I mean, I'm surprised he's not gone to a club on loan, let's say, to just play for 6 months and then come back. But I guess he'll integrate himself within the squad, which is nice to see. And you know, he's a player. He's good on the ball. He's good, strong in the air as well. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where he slots in. Does he come in for Ream? Does he come in for Mawson? You'd imagine it would be Ream, just because he's the older player in there, and you know, Mawson's probably our leading player at the back. So yeah, I'm happy with the signing, and I think Fulham have timed it well, not straight after the transfer window, in the middle of the international break, to break a bit of news. And yes, I think it's actually just good timing from the club. But yeah, it's a great signing, and I'm looking forward to see what he can offer for the second half of the season.
Let's talk about Mawson then, because obviously he missed a big chunk of last season, injured. He is back up and running now. Can he reach that level again? Because, you know, injuries always take their toll. How important of a player and key piece is he to Fulham's team this year, Guy?
Well, I guess from a personal point of view, he's got to like kick on this year.
Because he was in and around like England call-ups,
exactly,
weren't he? That's
yeah.
what the level that he was getting at.
Exactly, so it's quite an important moment for him. So in that case, he should be motivated, you know? And if you've got a motivated player, like a leader that we always think he is, maybe it's a bit of a cliche to say that he's a leader just because he's a centre-back and English and tough tackling, but I think people look to him to be that player anyway. Mm. So, yeah, important year for him personally. And if his personal fortune can coincide with Fulham's, that's a win-win for both parties, isn't it? You know, because he did come with a bit of a price tag, you say, like 20 million for a centre-back who was playing for a relegated team in the Premier League, you know. So we've put a lot of faith in him, and he didn't really repay it last year, albeit that's because of injuries, not because of like bad performances. But he needs to, you know, repay that transfer fee by getting us back up.
Well, hopefully he will repay that fee and get Fulham back up. We've been talking about the positive news that Michael Hector has signed and what's going on behind the scenes. Next, we're going to be talking a little bit of negative news, because Seri accuses Nice of fraud, and obviously Mitrovic's transfer from Anderlecht is being investigated. We're going to cover that next.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with the Fulhamish podcast boys, Dom Betts and Guy Barlow, the returning duo, back in the studio to answer all of your Fulham questions. And if you do have a Fulham question, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on the same number. We are talking a little bit of negative news now. We've talked about the positive news. We've talked about the Championship returning. The international break is over. Soon we'll be talking about the West Brom game on the weekend, 12:30 this Saturday, kicking the Championship back off. But now we have to talk about two important topics that do involve Fulham. The first being that Seri has accused Nice of fraud. Dom, what is going on here?
So it says there was an article that came out this week about Jean-Michel Seri had filed a criminal complaint against Nice, claiming his transfer to them was an act of fraud. Well, I think the way he was playing last year was fraudulent. So obviously he joined last summer with Maximilian Marshall in a joint deal from Nice for about £20 million, and you know, or £25 million, and it was assumed that you paid about £20 million for Seri and £5 million for Maximilian Marshall, because that's probably what they're worth in the transfer market. But it looks like it's actually splitting off £12 million on each. And I think apparently this was done to avoid playing Jean-Michel Seri a transfer bonus if he were to leave. So he's now suing the Nice, who are now owned by Sir Jim Ratcliffe of Ineos.
They are, yeah. Team Ineos, because they took over from Team Sky and the cycling. Jim Ratcliffe is keen to be a sports buyer. He tried to buy Newcastle. It was a failed takeover bid. He was a little bit short there. Mike Ashley wanted £350 million. Newcastle valued around the £280 million mark. He bought Nice for under £100 million. He's not clearly involved in this, but what is going on, guys? It's a very strange one, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there was always something a bit dodgy about this transfer, though. Like
you're saying it with a wry smile there, guy.
What? The way that they both arrived at the same time and, like, you know...
It was a bit cloak and dagger, wasn't it? Because for ages, like Dom alluded to there, everyone thought that Seri was the one who commanded the majority of that fee, but it clearly wasn't to be, was it?
And all these figures being quoted, like... Dom just mentioned there, the 12 million euros each. I remember when it first came out, it was 30 million pounds for both, 25 million for Seri, 5 million for Le Marchand. So now it's dropped down from 30 million pounds to 24 million euros, and it's half, and the split's gone to half and half.
Yeah, like, there was nothing, it still's always been looked at with a bit of uncertainty. No one really knew what came. I think halfway through last season, it came about in the French media that there was something dodgy about this deal. But another deal that's sort of been in into inquiry doesn't affect us personally. We weren't involved in the deal, but is the Alexander Mitrovic deal from Anderlecht to Newcastle United? It says the two people detained in an inquiry in Belgium into alleged fraud involving the transfer football players. Player's agent Christophe Henretay was held in Monaco. The other is said to be associate in Belgium, obviously, where he came from Anderlecht, where he joined from Partizan Belgrade. They said they were detained in raids on Tuesday and Wednesday. Prosecutors said they arrested them from an ongoing inquiry into the £30 million transfer of Mitrovic to Newcastle back in 2015. They said the facts involved notably money laundering operations and private corruption in the context of football player transfers. A search was carried out in London where the Met Police spokesman said they're also assisting the Belgian investigation. But it's understood that Newcastle themselves aren't directly connected to it. So hopefully there's nothing that will affect us. And I think it's just going to be Mitrovic's agent who's going to be the one.
Bit the old George Graham, I see.
Yeah. Weirdly, Newcastle are involved in both of these stories because Jim Ratcliffe, who tried to take over at Newcastle, and now obviously Mitrovic, the transfer, is the one from Newcastle. That is quite a strange one. But Fulham, again, aren't directly involved in the Mitrovic one. But will he continue to work with that agent then if he's obviously in all kinds of trouble at the minute, Dom?
Yeah, it's a very interesting one. I see how both these develop, really. I think for us, the Mornington one is probably actually the Mitrovic one, just because you don't know how it's going to affect the player. I mean, he bagged two last night, so I don't think it's affecting him too much. But yeah, it's going to be interesting how it affects him. And Seri, I just want to sort of get it over and done with. But then you've still got Maxime Lemarchand at the club, who was technically still involved in this deal, because obviously it was a joint deal to bring them both over from Nice. So yeah, it's interesting how this develops, but it's sad to see. But yeah, I mean, that's not really you can really say on the matter. But it was. I feel like though it is just because it's the international break. I feel like I don't know if these things would have come about if it wasn't the international break.
Clickbait stories. We need the drama to continue when there is no football. These stories obviously take more of a precedence. Well, we talked a little bit earlier about club or country, and it wasn't a disrespect to either. It was just I love one, but I love the other. Just slightly a little bit more, Dom. We have had some tweets about that, and the first tweet is from the Stanley Cup champion Grant. I'm assuming the Twitter name is Grant, but it just says that, and the tweet is. No way, would rather Fulham win a trophy all day over England. What do you say about that?
I'd just hark back to the 2018 World Cup. And you can't tell me that when England were winning in the quarterfinal, when Trippier scored that free kick, was not one of the best moments this country's ever seen.
I'd rather absolute limbs.
Yeah, and what my thing is, yes, if Fulham win a trophy, I'm not saying I don't want Fulham to win a trophy. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that for me, if England won the Euros, it's bigger than Fulham if Fulham won the FA Cup for me. Like it's just a lot bigger scale, and I think it's even better when you're not celebrating it over, let's say, a rival fan. Let's say the whole country is together except for Liverpool, obviously. Celebrating winning.
Scouse not English.
Yeah, celebrating winning something. I think it's the joint celebration that everyone's together. That's what I love. I mean,
it sounds without sounding cliche or cringe. We are a united front. Everyone wants one goal, one achievement there. Doesn't matter what colours you are, doesn't matter who you support.
Even at the Nations League, things like that guy went as well. It's just so much fun because everyone's getting along. Everyone's having a good time. Everyone's together with it.
Well, there was another tweet underneath from @Harry_FFC, another big Fulham fan. Harry there says, Fulham over England any day, guy. Seems that obviously for these fans, it is about Fulham. Me and Dom had another conversation earlier, and he said, this seems to be the modern fan. This is the new generation fan. People don't really care about the national team over their club team. Is it a modern day fan?
Maybe not a modern day fan. Maybe it's just we're noticing it more because of like social media and stuff. And I don't know, because you see all these like these accounts on Twitter with all the avies of like Ozil or like, but basically players who they're clubs players and not their actual faces, and they haven't got their real names, and it's like they're saying they might be following, you know, Fulham from the other side of the world, as far as we know. So like, they might not even be English, you know. Like, so why would they have that view, or why would they have the view rather that international football is better than club football, when they might be from a country that is like, you know, is like 100th in the world, is never going
to
win anything.
Another point I hark back to is in a negative, in a way, that all the I've been more devastated watching England than I have been watching Fulham. Apart from the Europa League final, there's not been a moment when I've been devastated watching Fulham. Like when we got relegated in 13-14, relegations aren't, you don't get devastated because it's such a long period of time, if that makes sense. You understand you're going to be relegated for a period of time. It doesn't like hit you like that.
The hurt lasts longer.
Yeah, I'm saying like one of my first ever painful sport moments was 2002 World Cup, when obviously Ronaldinho knocked us out with a free kick. And you
did
know,
he mean it?
That's for another story. and obviously we played so well in that game. Then I look at the penalty shootout losses to Portugal. I think of the Croatia game in the 2018 World Cup. I feel like when we lost to the Netherlands in the Nations, I'm not saying that was gutting, but you know the feeling. I don't get that with Fulham. I get the euphoria with Fulham, but I don't get the negatives. And I think that's what shows what means more to you, if that makes sense.
It's a good point. It's one that I've actually never thought of it in that way because, you know, I'm an Arsenal fan. When Arsenal have had, you know, some terrible losses, you know, the Champions League final, I was hurt. But when England have lost, I always remember the 98 game, you know, David Batty missing the penalty, the England Owen wonder strike, David Beckham getting sent off. I was in tears and, you know, we only in Russia in this World Cup we got to the semi-final. Everyone thought we was going to win, you know. It was GIF Central, wasn't it? It's coming home, and it never quite did. So I understand that the hurt lasts longer because we don't play week in, week out. It's a very good argument. We could talk about it further, but it does seem, Guy, there is a big split on this, doesn't it? 1-4 club and 1-4 country.
Yeah, I think the hurt point is like arguably the most important one. The fact that England are in a tournament for 3 weeks, it's such an intense period, you know. And that heightens everything. That heightens celebrations. That heightens the trips' goal, and then that heightens the you know, devastation at the end. So it's all about like the way we perceive it as, like, you know, emotionally as humans. If you want to get it down to that level, you know, like you said last season, we just became numb. You know, like me and Don were talking about. I remember on this show last January being like, if we lose away at Burnley next week, that's us done. And then we did lose away at Burnley, and then me and Dom were kind of like resigned to it from then on, and that was January.
But that,
you know?
Yeah, but that's not hurt.
No.
That's more of a realisation of something. I understand losing in the final is hurt, but I just feel like it affects you a lot more. Not, I don't think it is because we don't play as much. I think it's just, it means a lot more. The Euros, and for me, and obviously the World Cup, are the pinnacle of football. They both are, especially well, coming from a football fan like me. I just think they are the pinnacle of football. That they mean so much more than anything else.
Well, do you agree with Dom? You can tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 70 20 558. Is it your club or is it your country? Are they split? How do you feel? Well, we are talking about club because this weekend the Championship is back and Fulham play West Brom next. We'll be previewing the game with West Brom fan and guest Andy Jones.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with the boys from the Fulhamish Fan Podcast, Dom Betts, Guy Barlow, the returning duo to put all your Fulham concerns. Don't worry about them because they have got you sorted when it comes to Fulham. Well, the Championship returns this weekend. Fulham start it all off, the 12:30 kickoff to West Brom. And I'm delighted to say for the opposition preview, we have been joined by Andy Jones, a West Brom diehard. Andy, always a pleasure to have you on the show and talk to you a little bit. A massive game this weekend for both clubs. We know both clubs, what they want to achieve this year. The expectation is promotion to get back in that Premier League. How are you feeling towards this weekend's game?
A little bit apprehensive. I think it's difficult to really know the value of what West Brom and Fulham have both done this season. West Brom are unbeaten, but yet to keep a clean sheet. We look very good going forward, or certainly in and around the attacking third. We look like we need an informed striker. Charlie Austin and Kenneth Zahor hasn't really hit the ground running yet. Defensively, we keep conceding the odd goal. But as I said, we're unbeaten. We've won two out of the three away games we've played, drawing the other one. And Fulham are going to be a real test. I'll be there. I'm a bit nervous about how we're going to handle Mitrovic, Cavalero, Knockhart, Kearney. But I think if we keep hold of the ball at the other end, that'll hopefully limit damage and do some ourselves.
Yeah, you mentioned obviously you got two wins away from home, but your home records, so was it like 3-1-1 draws at home, and like that's carried over from last year as well. What is it that you haven't played well at home for ages? That's ultimately what got Darren Moore the sack, isn't it?
Darren Moore didn't win a home game for about 3 months. It's quite weird. He didn't win a home game for 3 months, but he also won sort of three Manager of the Month awards, beat QPR 7-1, won away at the Villa, all sorts of stuff. We won our last away game. We won our last home game against Blackburn, and we won playing some very impressive football at times. I think the real difficulty is West Brom have struggled to beat teams that say sort of play every man behind the ball. I think when we're in the Premier League, we're a defensive outfit, and then suddenly having to play on the front foot proved very difficult for us. I think the other thing was we tried to pass the ball out of defence, and the amount of times we get caught in front of our own box, particularly early on in the game when we weren't really warmed up, give away an early goal in front of our own box, a silly goal, and then we'd be a goal down, and very difficult. And I think we've had a lot of the teething problems last year that Fulham have perhaps had at the start of this year. I know that you lost to Barnsley first game, lost at home to Forest. 1 week you'll win, you'll score sort of 4 or 5 goals like you did against Millwall, and other weeks you'll look like you struggle. I think this summer's been another season of another moment of upheaval for West Brom. Stanley Bilic has come in, who I've been really impressed by, both in terms of his attitude and how he's got the team playing. And also, we've lost a lot of players. Craig Dawson's gone. Jay Rodriguez is gone, Dwight Gale's gone, Harvey Barnes is gone. I mean, up front, we've lost about 70-odd goals, and so there's going to be problems replacing that. But the players that have come in have done extremely well. Romain Sawyers will be very familiar with Fulham fans who've seen him play for Brentford. He keeps things ticking over at the bottom of the midfield. Up front, Zahor and Charlie Austin haven't quite bedded in yet. But there's still three wildcard players who I think the Championship know a great deal about. And that's Grady Diangana, who was at West Ham. He's been brilliant with the ball at his feet, all power, all pace, lots of aggression going forward. Shoots from outside the box, gets into the box, he's a real handful. Got another player called Matias Pereira, who's really good in the number 10 role. He's very tricky, moves the ball about, always seems to be able to find a yard of space. Doesn't touch wood, lose control of the ball, and it looks a very imminent that will be scoring goals from Philly to Marathon before he starts scoring himself. We've got some other good players. Nathan Ferguson's a kid that sort of exploded onto the scene at full-back, right-back. He was man of the match on his debut. He was only 18 when he played against Forest, and he's kept his place since. Filip Krivinovic is another tricky midfielder that we've got, who probably will start on the bench. But I think we'll have a lot of attacking threat. I'm worried defensively. We're without Ahmed Hegazi, who's probably our best centre-half. Saeed Ajayi, who we got from Rotherham, has been excellent. Carl Bartley knows the division inside out. But I worry defensively, especially if Kieran Gibbs is out, and we're playing two right-backs with one at left-back, just how we'll handle what threat Fulham have got. But as I say, Fulham haven't necessarily been that consistent. We've managed to remain unbeaten so far, and I think it'll be a big test for both teams.
Andy, how impressed have you been with Bilic so far? Because it's a tough start to the Championship season, and people have labelled him a passion merchant.
Yeah. I think having years of sort of Tony Pulis, where one, the football was negative, but also press conferences before the game would all be focusing on, you know, the threat of the other team, how we weren't going to lose, you know, how everyone was a really difficult game. To sort of have someone that really wants to talk about how we're going to play, have someone that talks about how good our young players are, good how we're going to move the ball, how we're going to score goals, how we're going to entertain the fans. And there's been a couple of teething problems. Again, as you said, we've only won one out of our three home games, but we drew the other two. I think the issue's been lacking a little bit of tightness at either end of the field. Defensively, we look sort of generally good, and then we'll make a silly mistake and give a goal away. Attacking-wise, we look very good in and around the box, just can't quite finish it off. Hopefully, Bilic has got a plan. I think we use the ball a lot better than last year. They know when to sort of mix it up, and then they know when to play out of trouble. Playing lots of nice tight triangles in and around the box, and he's bringing the young players through. Carl Edwards is very good. Nathan Ferguson is very good. We've also got a couple on loan at Charlton, Jonathan Lico and Sam Field, who are excellent. Both of those played in the Premier League, and hopefully they'll be coming back to us sooner or later.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask about Bilic's like style then, because I remember at West Ham when they came fifth in his first year, but then they had Payet that year, so like you can't really like it was a massive help. Like, so does he kind of, and when he was Croatian manager as well, I remember them being like quite a tight team and not exactly like tiki taka, you know. So what kind of football can I expect to see from your team on Saturday?
Yeah, we haven't got a great record away at Fulham. I think I've seen us get one draw there in about the six times I've been. So we usually play terrible at Fulham. So, but typically on a good day, we've been playing very well. We've used the ball well, passed from back to front, getting to the wing. There's got a lot of pace out on the wing. Deion Garner has got lots of pace. Matt Phillips is not a secret of this division. We're also a threat from set pieces. Got lots of delivery, lots of height in the team, which is still a leftover from Pulis and, you know, that sort of side. And we've got options off the bench. We haven't quite got a fully fit squad yet, but there's definitely players we can bring on. Pereira's in the team, Pavinovic. Carl Evers is another good player that we can bring on. Hal Robson-Kano is back fit, who is either brilliant or awful, but he's certainly a useful option off the bench. And I think we'll pose a threat. I worry about, you know, form, Craven Cottage, they can keep
Andy,
hold of the ball.
To interrupt you, Andy, just very quickly, as we're so pressed for time. What is your score prediction for the game on the weekend?
I worry that Fulham will win, but I'll go 2-2.
2-2, a point, you're sitting on the fence there, you may get
spinners. What do they think?
I haven't asked them yet. If you carry on listening to us on Love Sport, you will hear Dom and Guy's prediction for the Fulham game. Andy, always a pleasure to talk to you. Our very own Andy Jones there, giving us a preview of the game. Dom, Guy, I will turn my attentions to you two. He says 2-2, sitting on the fences, he may get splinters. Dom, what's your score prediction for this week?
2-1 Fulham.
2-1 Fulham, score win Fulham.
I'm going to go 2-1 Fulham as well.
2-1
tight
Fulham.
Game, really tight game, I reckon it'll be, yeah.
Okay, there you have it. Fulham will beat West Brom this weekend, according to the Fulhamish boys. This has been the Fulham Fan Show. Next week, we will be talking the return of the Championship, how Fulham got on against West Brom, and did the international break come at the wrong and right time? We will see you next week.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.